Hi, this is Ming Stoll, and you're listening to The Devil's Music with Pleasant Gaiman.
Pantheon Podcasts presents from Hollywood, California, The Devil's Music with Pleasant Gaiman. You are invited to join the Hollywood princess as she explores her lifelong pursuits in the occult, sex, love, and that sinful rock and roll. Ladies and gentlemen, step into the dark parlor of Pleasant Gaiman as she brings you The Devil's Music.
Hey there, this is Pleasant Gaiman, and you're listening to The Devil's Music, a Pantheon podcast. A little bit about me. I'm a punk rock witch from Hollywood, California. I've had a lifelong passion for rock and roll and the occult that started when I was a preteen. In the 70s, I was one of the first punks in LA, and as a teenager, I worked at the Whiskey a Go-Go, started producing shows, and made a Xerox fanzine called Lobotomy, which led me to write for every major rock publication you could think of. In the 80s and the 90s, I fronted three bands. I'm a best-selling author with 8 books out and more on the way. For the past 30 years, I've toured around the globe to teach and perform dance. You might have also seen me acting or dancing in music videos, feature films, and documentaries. Look for me in the new Go-Go's documentary. To find out more about me or to book a tarot reading, go to my website, pleasantgaiman.com. I'm really excited to be part of the Pantheon Podcasts network of rock and roll shows. Everyone here at Pantheon tells stories about the music we just adore so much, each and every one with a different twist. Find them all wherever you listen to podcasts, at Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Pandora, anywhere you get your favorite podcast fix. And head on over to pantheonpodcast.com to share a show with a friend. Or be damned to purgatory forever.
In the cool of the evening when everything is getting kind of groovy, I call you up and ask you if you'd like to go with me and see a movie. First you say no, you got some plans for the night, and then you stop and say,
hi, you guys. This is Pleasant Gaiman. I'm really excited to talk to my guest today, and you will be too. She's an award-winning screenwriter, a practicing witch. She's into everything that's all juicy and magical, like alchemy, hermetic doctrine, parapsychology, pagan rites, satanic rituals. She writes about lots of this for the movies that she's written. And she's also the hostess of the Occult Unveiled podcast. Please welcome the wondrous Ashley Ryan, aka Pythian Priestess. Hi, doll.
Hi, Pleasant. Thank you so much for having me on. Oh, what a wonderful intro.
I'm so excited to have you. And I just got to say, and the listeners will know this, you might be the youngest person that's been on my podcast.
Oh, at the ripe age of 31. Yeah.
No, I'm telling you, I interview people that are my age, quote, my age, a lot, you know, like old punk rock people and people that have been doing witchcraft since before you was born. And but I just realized that anyway, I found out about you because you kept coming up in my Instagram feed, which is one of like the most insanely stupid and modern things to say.
Well, I'm so grateful.
I loved the way that you looked, and I love your posts, and we've never met in real life, but we're meeting now in virtual reality and in front of the devil and everybody here.
Woohoo! Yeah, so, I'm so grateful.
Well, I'm so glad. I saw something in your bio that really raised my eyebrows. So you graduated from Loyola Marymount, right?
Yes, I did. Yes.
And that's so awesome, but it seems so contrary to what you do. Like, what was that like?
You know, it was wild. I had a lot of hesitations about going to Loyola Marymount, but I was assured that I would be respected and my beliefs would not be questioned, and they never were. And I have to say, Loyola Marymount's library is filled with satanic information. I was shocked when I went in doing research for my unproduced pilot, but award-winning, The Devil and Saint Jane, which is the story of Jane Mansfield and her love affair with Satanism.
And Anton LaVey.
Oh, absolutely, with Anton LaVey. And I was like, well, you know, I'm going to go into this library. They're probably not going to have a whole lot. I was wrong. They had a lot. And it was so great. You know, my background in writing and producing, but magic helps a lot in that, especially producing. Like, I have a lot of anxiety and I say that's my gift in producing, but so is magic. Being able to temper the energy on set and being able to really control the energy, because I don't know, Pleasant, if you've ever been on in a film set, but that is like
many.
Yeah. Like, the stakes are very high. There's a lot of money being thrown around and everyone's like on edge all the time. And just being able to bring some earth down on those people and get everyone grounded is so helpful.
Yeah, I know. I've been on I've been on frantic, insane sets before, but going back to Loyola Marymount, they also have KXLU, which is like the best like punk rock station and alt music station, among other things. But also going back to Jane Mansfield, I lived in a really famous, like one of the most famous punk rock houses, like really in any country. It was called Disgraceland, but Mickey Hargitay was my landlord.
And no way.
Yes way. And I'd been obsessed with Jane Mansfield for years. And when I moved in there, like, I found out afterwards that he was the landlord. And I was sitting on my front porch one night wearing this like beautiful emerald green 50s ball gown that I'd gotten at a studio sale. You know, it was really, air quotes for people who are listening, expensive. It was probably like $3, which back in those days in the late 70s was like really expensive. But that day I had just had my hair dyed, and it had to get dyed like a million times because my hair is so dark. It was white blonde. And we had to cut a bunch of it too, because there was henna on it and that part turned orange. But I was sitting there frying my brains out, and I was looking at these beer bottles that were strewn around the porch, and it was Mickey's Big Mouth. And I was thinking, wow, those are like exactly the color of my dress. That's how high I was, right? And it's at night. And all of a sudden, my landlord comes walking up the walkway, and he'd never been there before. It was only the manager, right? And so I looked up at him, and then in my head, because I was so messed up, I was like, wow, I was just looking at Mickey's Big Mouth beer, and here's Mickey Hargitay. And he got halfway up the walkway and he stopped in his tracks, and he said in his accent, excuse me, miss, has anybody ever told you that you look just like Miss Jane Mansfield? And I'm sitting there thinking, what the fuck is the etiquette when you owe a lot of back rent to your landlord and he's telling you look like his dead movie star wife?
Wow, that's a moment.
I know. And I just kind of, I went, thank you. And it echoed in my head because I was so frying.
That's awesome.
That's pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, Jane came to me in a very interesting way. I I was not very open about my practices. I'm from Florida. And Florida, for all its weird and strangeness, is pretty Catholic with an underlying current of hoodoo and voodoo. And when I came out here and I'm like, all right, well, now I'm in the land of the free. I'm going to do everything I want. I'm going to learn everything I want. And I was learning about Anton LaVey and all of the stories about him and then his supposed affair with Marilyn Monroe, maybe, maybe not. But then Jane Mansfield. And I was like, man, A, has a type. And then learning that he took credit for her death really pissed me off. And I was like, this woman's story deserves to be told better.
Yeah. So tell everyone the name of that movie again, because they got to see it.
So unfortunately, my pilot has not been picked up yet, but there is a great documentary. I'm going to make sure I get the name right.
Okay. Yeah, I gotta write this shit down too. Okay, she's furiously Googling while we're on the air, but I need to know it. You guys need to know it, because this is just like the most.
It's so good. It's
crazy Mansfield. Story. If you don't know about Jane Mansfield and Anton LaVey and all of that, like, you guys will love it.
Yeah, it's Mansfield 66/67.
Okay.
And it is a musical documentary, and it's so fun. I saw it at the New Art Theater in 2017 while I was doing my research for this script. Now, the script has bounced around quite a lot. It's almost gotten sold multiple times, but not the right buyer yet, you know, especially because of the delicate nature of this topic. And with the return of the Satanic Panic 2.0, you know, people are very nervous about it.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I feel like that shit's never going to go away. You know, that'll keep revisiting backwards and forwards all the time.
Sure is hot. I'm giving it all I got. I knew I could.
Puts a dip in my hip. So when, what, like, tell everyone that's listening, because I know what this is, but tell them why your name is Pythian Priestess.
Sure. So Pythian, or Pythia as the correct name is, was the Oracle at Delphi, which you may be familiar with. She was the high priestess of Apollo in ancient Greece, and she was so respected. They had generals and kings and philosophers come for information from her, from Apollo, the god. And when I was very young, I was about 4 years old, when I told my aunts, who were Benedictine nuns, that I wanted to be a priest. And they were like, oh, you can't do that because you're a girl. And then I said, well, fuck this. Fuck Christianity. I'm going to go.
I knew you were going to say fuck immediately, and we don't even know each other.
Yeah, I was really upset. Like, I was like, well, whatever. If you guys don't want me, I don't want you. And then when I was in undergrad and I was studying, my background in undergrad is in philosophy and theology, I learned about the Pythia priestess. And that was my first introduction for a woman being able to be a priest. And I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever read. And I immediately, the kids call it like hoarding usernames. So I like made an email, I made an Instagram, I made all this stuff. I'm like, one day I'm going to be the Pythia priestess. And I did. In 2019, TikTok came out. Well, I mean, it was out before then, but I first learned about it. And I was like, you know what? This is pretty cool. I'm going to just start making. Tarot was the first stuff I started with. It was pretty light, and it just blew up. I had 100,000 followers in a month, and I was like, wow, this is so wild. This is that people actually care about the stuff that I'm teaching them.
Yeah, that's amazing. I went to Delphi when I was in Greece a while ago. It was amazing.
So cool.
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing.
Did you smell any of the weird sulfur smells that came up from the mountain?
I did. I smelled that, and like I'm really sensitive to scents, but also I do weird stuff like with smelling things. Like I used to go to Douglas Fairbanks' grave at Hollywood Forever, and it was like this big mausoleum. Well, it was like a sarcophagus, and it used to have vents in it, and I used to stick my face in the vents and just like open my mouth and inhale, because I thought I'd be able to get like his swashbuckling movie star DNA into my body that way.
I love that. That's funny. But also, like, what did it smell like?
It didn't really smell like anything, but it didn't smell decomposing or anything, because it was it was an old grave. But also this was back in the days before Hollywood Cemetery was Hollywood Forever, and it looked like a Hammer movie set. Like it was sad because people had broken into a lot of the mausoleums, and like the coffins were trashed or like covered with graffiti. But yeah, that was a wild time. I spent a lot of my teenage years there at night because it wasn't even locked at night, which is why, you know. Yeah.
So I used to hang out in cemeteries when I was a teenager. Not as cool as your cemeteries, but
wait,
I feel like that's...
Did you grow up here? Did you grow up here?
I grew up in Florida.
Oh, that's right. You said that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was about 2 or 3 blocks away from the farm I lived on, there was this really old cemetery from the 1800s that I'd go hang out at and take care of, because I guess that's what weird goth girls do.
Yeah. When I was really tiny, I hung out at one that was about 3 blocks away from my house. And this was in New England. Yeah. Oh, my God. Those gravestones. Have you ever seen the gravestones in New England?
I haven't. I've seen pictures, but not
they've
in
got
person.
Like death's head angels on them. And they've got like the most, some of the epitaphs are like rhyming.
Whoa.
Like my favorite one was, remember me as you pass by, as you are now, so once was I, as I am now, so you will be, prepare for death and follow me.
Whoa, body chills. That's wild.
Yeah.
My favorite story of being in the graveyard, there was, so this was a different graveyard in St. Augustine, California, and someone had put up a bunch of Confederate flags for the Confederate soldiers.
California or Florida?
Florida, California. And I decided that I didn't like that. I thought that this was probably, you know, this is not great. We're right, you know, on the precipice of having, you know, a Black president. Why don't we, let's remove these. So in the middle of the night, my friends and I got really high and we like snuck into the graveyard and took all of the Confederate flags. And there was the security guard came by at once and I was like, drop. So we all dropped. And all I could think about was like, I'm laying on top of a dead person right now. Oh my God. So we took all of these Confederate flags and we burned them in the fire pit of our backyard.
Wow. Were they ever replaced?
You know, I don't think so, but there was one that I missed and it haunted me because I would drive by the cemetery and there's always that one.
Oh my God. Wow. What about out here? Have you been to any other graveyards out here?
So out here, I started to do some dark tourism stuff. So I went to the Manson Cave out in Simi Valley, which is not easy to get to. It's actually kind of difficult. That was spooky. That was kind of bone chilling. Somebody had posted a picture of Manson's head out there. You can see like where they carved like their names into the wall and stuff. That was pretty creepy.
Wow, that is creepy. Creepy crawly.
Yeah.
I used to go up to Sharon Tate's house on Cielo Drive before mm-hmm. going to the whiskey and just get drunk up there with friends, and we would sit there and like toast her and just have a drink. But
R.I.P. Sharon Tate.
Oh. Yes, she was so beautiful.
She was. I've been to, obviously, I think a lot of people have the old LA Zoo. That's pretty creepy.
Oh my God, I've spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
In the 80s, we used to have parties there. One time we had a caveman party there. And cool. these people that were later in a band called Possum Dixon, but they were just kids then, and they were like sort of skulking around the zoo, and they saw all of us getting wasted in caveman outfits in the old zoo, and they thought we were a cult.
I mean, okay, that's cool. I want to be a part of your cult. It sounds fun.
Yeah, you and I would have a great cult together.
So yes,
we've got really similar interests. So why don't you tell everybody kind of how does your practice go? Like, do you work, are you solitary, or do you work with other people? I mean,
So yes, I'm in a secret society. I have a vow of silence, so I can't talk too much about it.
Can you say the name or no?
No, I can.
Oh my God, I'm so obsessed now. I'm more obsessed with you than I was.
Oh, thank you. I am initiated. So I knew I was a priestess. I earned my priestesshood in 2019, and then I was officially initiated in 2020. I can tell you how that happened. It's a very sad story, so just letting everyone know it's sad. In undergrad, I had a roommate whose brother was schizophrenic, and I got a phone call. I was working on an MTV set for Ridiculousness, and I got a phone call to saying my brother committed suicide. And I found all of this weird stuff in his room. She sent me pictures of the Black Pullet. She sent me pictures of Manly P. Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages. He had a bunch of handmade runes. And she's like, I don't know what to do with this stuff. I don't know what this is. And I said, oh my God, okay, let me fly out. So I told the director, I was like, hey, I need to take 3 days off work. I'll be back Monday. I need to go. Someone just died. I need to go take care of this. Now, I like, in retrospect, I was like, why am I doing this? Why am I spending $500 to go? Like, my friend has her family. She could take care of this by herself. But like, I knew I just needed to be there. So the death was very brutal. It was he stabbed his eyes out. He stabbed his stomach. And then, yeah, it was very brutal. And the family, like, couldn't do anything. They were just really in shock and in pain. So I became the death doula for them. I went to the site. I made a memorial. And I helped them, like, go through the room and find all of his things to get ready to make the altar for his passing, to help them with that. And the one thing that I noticed, I went in there was a huge scrying mirror. I mean, it was like 4 feet by 4 feet. It was really big. And I was like, there's something with this mirror.
Scrying, you guys, for anybody that doesn't know, it's like it's staring into a mirror or water or like a crystal ball or whatever. And, mm-hmm. and you see images and you get impressions from it. So I just
have right. to know. Of course, I understand. I know you and I know what that means, but a lot of people don't.
Scry me a river. Hang on, let's take a little break for a minute before we finish this story. I'm back with Ashley, and we're going to hear about the scrying mirror and what you saw or what you found out from that or about him.
Yes. So the first thing I noticed was that the mirror was silver-backed. So I knew it was a magic mirror. Like, this had been done. I also found some kind of sigil that had been painted on the back in silver. And I said, okay. So I have to figure out how to close this mirror. I need to figure out, because I knew it was a portal, because the family members kept seeing his spirit appearing like in the hallway in his bedroom. And so I got real serious with the spirit. I said, hey, you chose to leave this plane. These people are suffering and you're fucking it up for them. They have to grieve. Leave. And he wouldn't do it. So I did a lot of research, and it was pretty hard to find information on how to like close the portal. So what I ended up doing was I was like, okay, so it's a reflective surface. I need to be able to close it with another reflection. So my girlfriend and I was like, all right, we're going to take this giant ass mirror. And it was a full moon, like magically, it was also a full moon.
Of course it was.
Yeah. So we put it under the water of the pool to reflect the full moon in it. Ooh. And then I said some prayers, closed the portal. No longer shall this be a pathway between worlds. And then we took it out and then we smashed it.
Ah, and I was going to ask you if you smashed it because of all the, you know, mirror superstitions, which I yep. am really crazy about. But my first impression was that I would have smashed it too. And then I was like,
yeah, I did have a lot of hesitation about that. But something just told me inside, like, you need to do this. So we did. The funeral was a closed casket for obvious reasons. And I went back to LA and I got this weird, I don't know how to explain it to anyone other than just I knew things. So that's called clairsentience, which is a psychic knowing. And I went to the Green Man in Los Angeles. They were doing a spirit quest to go see Anubis. And I was like, oh, Anubis. I know Anubis. He can help me do this. So I took
Anubis is the Egyptian god of mummification and the afterlife.
That's right. Yes.
I'm just telling that to everybody out there. Okay, let's take a little break and we'll get back into all of this podcast, which could literally go on for like 3 or 4 more hours. And here I'm back with Ashley, and we are done. I hope you guys are as fascinated as we are.
Yes, of course.
They want to hear about concerts as well. So,
oh, we can talk about concerts.
No, too. Of course we won't. But you guys, how fascinating is this? Whoever's listening, I know you're all screaming and cheering right now as you're hearing. Okay. Also, Ashley, I was at that Vision Quest.
Were you? Wow.
Oh yeah, I work at the Green Man.
Okay. So okay. We've crossed paths without knowing it. That's pretty
I know,
cool.
That's so crazy. Okay, go on with this story though, because I'm panting over finding out.
So I took the 24 karat gold Ankh with me into this vision quest. And during this quest, we were on the boat of Anubis. And I asked him, I said, will you please turn this Ankh, which is a key. An Ankh is a key. And I asked him to make it a connection to that spirit so I can continue to help it through the afterlife, into the afterlife. Anubis takes the Ankh and then it like turns real, real, real big in the sky. He does something to it. I don't really know. And then he brings it back to me. And then I talked to Griffin, who works at the Green Man, and he gave me the 40-day ritual of helping the spirit cross over. And so I do this ritual for 40 days, which is lighting a candle, praying, having the picture of the person. And at the end of the 40 days, I got this weird dream. And it was the young man who had died. He was like turned and he waved, but he was dressed in gold.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh. And he left. And then I called my girlfriend. I said, hey, I had this weird dream. I think your brother has finally passed on. But, you know, this is super weird. He was like dressed all in gold. And she goes, that's so weird that you say that. Because when the police found his body, he had stuffed all of his pockets with all of the gold items that he owned.
Wow.
So weird.
That's
real intense. And so it was then that I felt in my heart, I was like, I just accomplished something very big. I did something. It was a moment of servitude to others and of self-sacrifice. And then about 6 months later, I had been initiated. And when you're initiated, you receive a special name. And I received priestess of blank and blank. It's amazing how some things that in your heart you know before they manifest here on the earthly plane.
I know that stuff is so crazy to me. Stuff like that's been happening to me my whole life. And when I was really little, I thought everybody had it. I mean, actually, because there was no internet or anything when I was growing up in the 60s, I thought everyone was like that for a really fucking long time.
Oh, that's wonderful, though.
Yeah. But then also, I thought that you had to, you know, if you were psychic or, you know, had any kind of the clair abilities, which for you guys listening, clairsentience is clairknowing, clairaudience is clairhearing, clairvoyance is clairseeing. There's so many clairs.
There are.
And of course, there's chocolate eclairs, which is also one of my favorite.
Yum, yum, yum.
Things. But I used to think that, like, you couldn't really be psychic or knowing that kind of stuff, you know, unless you had it 24/7, because also, you know, like I didn't realize that would drive any person completely insane. So are you psychic aside from some of these things? I mean, would you describe one of your abilities as, tuning into?
Yeah, I definitely. So I have all of the clairs. I was very blessed.
I do too. It's crazy.
High five, sisters.
We're high-fiving ourselves to the Zoom screen right now. Here, wait. Here, so you guys can hear it. High five.
So for me, it's especially when I'm reading tarot. I open up. I take down my wards and allow other people's spirits to communicate with me. And I've only had it one time where it was external, outside of myself. And that poor girl, it was a giggle. And this poor little, the girl who got her first tarot reading ever, she's like, "What was that?" And I'm like,
"Oh, she heard it too. She heard.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay."
Yeah. And I was like, that was one of your spirits. And they're just saying that you need more like laughter in your life. But a lot of the time, for me, that audience or that hearing really comes through as only one or two words. And sometimes it's like, one example was there was a young woman who had come in to talk about love, her love life. And like, I was being bombarded. It was like, I was being hit with like sexual assault, sexual assault, sexual assault, sexual assault. And I was like, oh my God. I don't want to ask her that. Like, how horrible. And I was like, "Sweetheart, I'm going to ask you something. And I apologize if this is triggering for you, but were you sexually assaulted?" Waterworks, tears just down her face. And she's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Okay, I can help you to a certain extent, but your guides want you to go get professional help to heal through this." So it's stuff like that. Another one I got once was this woman who, sometimes I get like little visions. It was this woman who was coming in to talk about her career. And I just saw lines and like lines of books, but it wasn't a library. And I told her, I'm like, "Hey, I'm just seeing like lots of bookshelves, lots of like lines and lines of books. Do you like books? Do you want to work with books?" And she says, "Oh, that's record keeping. I do that for the law firm that I work at."
Wow, that's cuckoo. I know sometimes it's so hard to it's hard to interpret when you see something or you just get an image like that. That's like, I mean, clairaudience, you pretty much know what's going on. But I've had visions of some stuff in readings or not in readings, and half the time it's like a complete what the fuck moment. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Like one time my Bell Book and Candle, my Witch Burlesque show co-producer, this happened with her. I was getting ready to go to the Green Man store, and it was a beautiful spring day in April, and I was pulling on combat boots, and then the sun was pouring into my room. So I was like, "Oh, it's a nice day." you know, like, this is going to be great. And then I had a vision of my friend Shauna's foot in these little rhinestone sandals. And I was like, oh, it's so nice. Well, like, why am I wearing boots? I'll just wear sandals like she did. That's what I thought, because I didn't stop to think about it. And then I was driving to the store, and I got a call in my car, and it was her. And she's like, "Are you? Where are you? Where are you?" And I said, "I'm like 5 minutes away from the store." And she said, "I got out of my car and I stepped directly onto a huge rusty nail, and no one's at the store." And so I told her to find like the nearest urgent care. And I said, yeah, "I'll be right there." And when I got there, she was wearing those sandals. So that like before, when I'd had visions, like, you know, some of them were sort of obvious what they were, but this was just like with you in the books, it was hard to interpret. I took it like, oh, let's just wear like your little sandals today. But I didn't even think of like calling her to find out if she was okay, because usually when someone pops into my head, you know, for some reason, I will just text them immediately or call them, you know, if they're on, mm-hmm. like, hey, thinking of you, because I don't want to say anything like, are you okay?
You know? Yeah, you don't want to scare them. Yeah. Definitely. Wow. Yeah, like you said, sometimes it's hard to interpret because spirit uses our unconscious mind. So it's only telling us what we already know or have information about most of the time.
Yeah, I know. And there's so many, like, you know, pieces in our memory banks to pull from that, like, you know, like how that gets selected to be something that you see or hear about or know about. Yeah, that's just wild. So I had a weird experience with tarot too on a subject. Like, I mean, we both had several of them, I'm sure. Like, we could spend like a 5-hour podcast talking about that. But for the audience, whenever you're doing a tarot reading, you've got to be very straight up with the person who's sitting with you. But you also, you know, you want to tell the truth, but you don't want to be blunt, because some of the news is so sensitive. You don't want to completely freak them out. And some people do tarot readings for fun, and other people do them because they're going through like a really bad or heavy or exciting or just tumultuous time in their lives.
Yeah.
So you got to be really careful about what you say. And I was talking to someone that I had never read before, and this was a phone reading, and how you got the sexual assault thing. Mm-hmm. I'm getting goosebumps. I got it when you said that, but also when I think of this. I was talking to her, and she said she wanted to find out about how her kids were going to react when their father got out of prison. And I saw this huge, giant neon sign that said incest. And I was like, there's no way that I can't say this.
How do you say that?
Yeah. And then it was just a second later, she said, this is going to sound maybe weird or upsetting to you, but he was in there for molesting both of them. Like seconds after that. But I couldn't just come out and say that. I just saw the word incense, the neon light. You know what I mean? Or even just say it, you know, like.
Yeah. Because like, what if you're wrong and you offend them? Like, you don't want to.
Yeah.
What if you
say that and they were thinking of talking about that, but they didn't want to, and then they'll just burst into tears or something. There's so many, you know, I've read at a lot of like large parties where there was other readers and stuff as well as me. And most of the time I just want to ask you if this is true. Most of the time at the end of the night, people would be comparing readings and, you know, oh, I talked to this actress, or like, oh, this person's kid is gifted or something. And they're like, what was your night like? And I'll be like, well, I had stillborn twins and someone whose brother had been murdered last week, and then just on and on and on with like horrifying traumas. And I feel like that's, I mean, obviously people want readings like that if they're going through something gnarly, but like at parties, like they all come to me. Like they're at the party, but then they really need help or something.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I've read at weddings before. Yeah. And that, yeah. People come to me, you know, it's, I don't think people know this. It's probably an intuition, but a lot of legal stuff. I'm really good with legal work. And I remember one time I was at this wedding and it was this older woman. She had been, I wish I remember the name of the musician. She was very married to a famous musician who had recently died. And she was in a lawsuit with his daughter and like who was going to get the estate and stuff like that. And that came up and I was like, oh, you know, I had the devil card. I had justice reversed. And I was like, so what's the lawsuit about? And don't bribe the judge. That's not going to help you get what you want.
And how did she react?
She was like kind of taken aback for a minute. She was like, how did you know that? And I was like,
you're like, why did you cards, come to baby? Me for a
reading? Yep. don't mess up the justice system. Let's do this in a good way.
Wow. That is so wild.
But I think you're right. A lot of people think that tarot is going to be like this fun, cute, quirky experience. And it can be very, it really drudges up some of those traumas and that maybe the darkness you don't want to see because your spirits want you to evolve. They want you to grow and they don't want you to stay stagnant. So it can definitely be, it can be, if even if you think it's going to be a fun little birthday reading, you might end up with some real truth you were not ready to hear.
I know. Yeah. Or some things that you completely doubt and then it comes totally true.
Mm-hmm.
That's happened to me a lot. I've had clients that I told them something and one of them didn't talk to me for like 4 months and she had been a regular client. And then she called me back and said, I'm sorry, everything you said came true. I was really mad at you for saying that.
Yeah, I've had that happen before. I had one client who was doing something I didn't approve of, but like, of course, I'm going to stay as neutral as possible. She was doing a forced love spell on this man for like a year and a half.
Wow.
And it had not been worth. Yeah, a long time. A lot of cords being tied in the ethers. And she was so obsessed. And I'm like, girl, why don't you just try and like try dating somebody else? She did. And while she was on the phone with this new guy, she got into a car wreck. And like, she was fine, but her car was destroyed. And she's like, why didn't you tell me this was going to happen? I'm like, girl, I didn't know that you were going to get into a car wreck, but I can't tell you. Your spirits are saying you made a mess and we're not going to let you out of it.
Wow. And then what was her reaction to that?
Mad. She still hasn't talked to me, but that's okay.
Maybe that's better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard when you do, like, I think that's one thing that people don't realize is how serious spell work actually is. It's not this cute, fluffy thing that you're doing. It's very serious, energetic work that does have consequences, whether good or bad.
Yes. So also, if any of you out there listening are considering doing a love spell, do not do a fucking binding spell. Because when you get done with that person, they will never be done with you.
Yep. You're going to have a stalker for life.
Okay. So why don't you tell everybody some tips for developing any of their psychic senses?
So the first one is probably the one that everyone's heard of and thinks it's boring. It's meditation. That is so important because we have, there's two parts of ourselves. We have our animal self and then we have our spiritual self. But our monkey mind or our animal mind is always chattering. So it's important to learn how to quiet that mind. And a lot of people think like, oh my God, I have to sit and meditate for 10 minutes. How the hell am I going to do that? No. Just start with 1 minute and focus on your breath. Your breathing is the most important tool that you have to regulating your emotions. It also regulates your blood pressure. It can help you get rid of headaches. So doing just an inhale for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, and then exhale for 4 seconds. Now, if you have ADHD, which I know a lot of people have, I find it helpful to have something like smoke or a little light, like a tea light to watch as you're meditating, and just try to focus on that. And when you have a thought, the most important thing is say, oh, I'm thinking. And then don't judge yourself. Just say, okay, and go back to what you were doing. I think that's a big thing people have issues with when they're trying to develop their psychism, is that they're so judgmental. Like, you got to train yourself just like you would train an animal. It takes a while.
That's good. Like training an animal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of breathing, you guys, is so important. I do that with my students when I'm teaching them dance, and I do that when I do it too. My clients, when I'm doing energy healing, if you ever need to get grounded or focused, that kind of breathing, especially done like with little pauses a couple of times in a row, really, really regulates you. It kicks in your parasympathetic nervous system and gets rid of mm-hmm. the fight or flight impulses, and it just calms you down. You know, if you ever have to go into like a job interview or see someone you don't like, or do something that's very important to you, it's that kind of breathing is really good. It's amazing how well the human body can function and, you know, fix itself.
Yeah. It's supposed to, but it's like a lost art.
I know, totally. Well, because I feel like, I mean, our society has just washed so many things out of everything, you know, because everything, you know, like, I feel like maybe hundreds of years ago, people just knew this intrinsically, you know, when it wasn't the amount of distractions that there is today. Oh, hold on. Here comes an old man in the soprano cop. I'm going to cover the microphone, you guys. I just hacked up the devil's excrement. It's really windy today in Los Angeles, but Ashley and I are both glad it's not raining.
Wow, I'm so glad it's not raining. I have noticed when I go outside is the yellow pollen everywhere. And I'm like, oh, no wonder I'm sneezing and being crazy. There's like all this yellow stuff in the air.
I know. Oh my God. And I have now learned to not trust the sun, which is, I mean, not the sun, but I mean that, like, I'll see it outside, like how it is for right now. And I was like, how long is this going to last? And moving to LA from New England, like every morning for months, I would open the shades and say, what's the weather going to be like today? And it took me a really long time to realize, oh, it's going to be sunny and warm. But now that's all been washed away with the trauma of this rainy wind.
I know, right? I moved to California, not Seattle.
Exactly.
You know, it's so interesting too. Like, Los Angeles is such a special place energetically.
Oh my God, I say that all the time. Tell me your take on that.
So the occultist named Helena Blavatsky, who was the founder of the Theosophy Society.
That's right. She predicted.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
She predicted that Southern California would be the hub of occultism. And there's a couple of things here. One, we're near the ocean, and the ocean is constantly bringing in new energy. And we have a lot of what in the old times would be a lot of trade. So we have a lot of different ideas flowing through the city. The other thing is that we're on some ley lines, I think. There's like a combination. So for people who aren't familiar, ley lines are the Earth's magnetic field and where they interact in certain places. So the native people who lived here long before we did, they had sacred places like the Devil's Gate, where the, I believe it's pronounced Arroyo, A-R-R-O-Y-O.
Wait. No, Arroyo. It's Arroyo. Arroyo.
Yes.
Right near the suicide bridge in Pasadena. And also, I knew you were going to start getting into Jack Parsons. Who's not just a rocket scientist, but like an amazing occultist.
Yes. And totally a hottie.
I know, and his wife too.
I know. Yeah, beautiful people. Beautiful.
Yeah. That's the kind of people that we always want to be witches in movies, but they really were.
Yeah, they were. So the Arroyo, that particular location was known for the spirit of the coyote, because the babbling of the creek or the water sounded like the coyote's laughter. So you start to see like all of these, all the way back into the native people, there was special things about this area, this land, where Manly P. Hall's Philosophical Society is built in Los Feliz. He chose that spot for a very specific reason, because of the energetic energy of that location. So we've got Theosophy, Manly P. Hall. We have Jack Parsons and Aleister Crowley. And then, of course, you have that little shoot off of Scientology. So you've got major hubs of occultism and magic here, which I think is absolutely what Helena was talking about.
Yes, that too. And then just as far as energetic, not necessarily occulty, but just for the general energy of Los Angeles, I have always felt that it's got a really unique energy, because so many people came out here with such high hopes. Mm-hmm. I mean, not just for the weather, like earlier, you know, when stuff like the gold rush and things were going on, but for as soon as movies started, people came out here, and there's been so much, you know, so many decades of absolute like hope and hopefulness and sort of promised land feeling, but also so many of those people had their hopes just dashed to bits. So there's mm-hmm. this really crazy underlying layer of energetic sadness. And Hollywood itself, like the area of Hollywood, is so fucking haunted. It's nuts, you know? Sorry.
Absolutely.
Another demon's coming out of me. Yeah, but it's got you know, and there was also lots of scandals and stuff going on here. And I mean, crimes everywhere. But like even the Black Dahlia like plays into this energy, because that is just, I mean, it's so, L.A. is so bright and beautiful physically with the people and the weather and stuff. But the underlying energy of LA is really, it's chaotic, it's sinister, it's scary, and a lot of times it's sad. And it's almost a schizophrenic mix, I think, of what, you know, aside from the magical stuff, just things that like people can just sense, but not even know they're sensing, you know? Do you think?
Yeah, if you have to have that pull, right? We have the highest hopes and success, and then the lowest depths of poverty and gang violence. You know, there have been so many notorious serial killers. So I'm a huge true crime fan.
Oh, me too. I mean, we can do another whole podcast about it.
Yeah. And I think that's what's fascinating too, is that because people are here to be vulnerable, that sometimes they get taken advantage of.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, LA is a wild place, but it's also a very magical, magical place.
Yeah. And so it's all about, you know, what I was taught was like, build that tough skin and be smart.
Yes, that's definitely true. But also, I mean, yeah, you've got to build the tough skin, but I think you or anybody has to also like let their, you know, let their, like, you can hide your vulnerability, but like, don't get jaded over, you know, shit happening to you, because it will in LA on many levels. You know, there's lots of like rejection if you're trying to be in entertainment or to be a model or, you mm-hmm. know, anything like that. So that's what you have to be tough about. And you also have to be on the lookout for like crime and stuff like that, because that's everywhere. I used to tell people, don't be fooled by the little pastel houses. You can't tell what's a good neighborhood and what's like owned by the Crips or the Bloods or something. Yeah.
You're absolutely right about that. Yeah, it's like the, since we're talking about trend, like the Los Feliz murder house, right? Like, what a beautiful little house.
That's also, I live right between the Theosophy Society and the, and that, and the Black Dahlia.
Right. Oh, wow.
Yeah. You gotta come over sometime. No.
I would love to. I would love to.
They found human remains under my house once. This was a long time ago. Yeah. There was a plumber. There was a plumber that was doing something in the crawl space under there. And I just happened to be outside at that point, and I saw his body coming out backwards because it was too small for him to turn around. So his feet were coming first. And the second he got out of the house, he started making the sign of the cross over and over, just going, Santa Maria, Santa Maria, Santa Maria. And then that thing, I knew the landlord was there, and the police were there, but it wasn't a body. It was a full skeleton.
Whoa. So yeah, it's probably there for a long time.
It's been there for a long time. But I mean, also then one time, my neighbor in the front part of the house, which is like a big giant old craftsman, him and his girlfriend were sitting stoned in the bathtub having a bath, and he saw this sort of square on the wall, and he thought it was just because he was high, and he said, I want to touch it, and he touched it with his finger, and it fell open, and there was a secret room in the house, and it was full of like boxes and boxes of glass shot needles and diaries about tropical fish and drug use.
Huh.
So of course he came running over to me. Look at this. Look at what I found.
Wow.
I was immediately like, does this have anything to do with that skeleton? But I just thought that because he wasn't there when the skeleton was found.
That's crazy. Yeah. And it's so hard with skeletons because you can only use really teeth for identifying at that point, like dental records.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's crazy cool though. I've never found any human remains. I think I'm happy about that, but there's a part of me that's like, no, you want to. That's kind of messed up. That's just that's just this attorney in nature.
And Anubis would be proud.
Yes, yes. Well, Pleasant, this has been so much fun. It's so, we're like sisters. I love this.
I know. This is how we got to meet each other, but now we're going to be friends. Anyway, you guys, that was Ashley Ryan, the Pythian priestess. How fabulous is she? She is just wonderful. You can find her all over social media. All her links will be in the episode description. So I will catch you guys at the next version of The Devil's Music, and I hope you all have a magical day.
You got to pick up every stage. You got to pick up every stage. You got to pick up every stage. Oh no, must be the season of the witch. Must be the season.
The Devil's Music is written and hosted by Pleasant Gaiman. Produced by Aaron Alden. All sound design by Jerry Danielson of Busy Signal Studios. And of course, is part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at pantheonpodcasts.com. Our social presence is at Pantheon Podcasts on Facebook and Instagram. Tweet us at Pantheon Pods. All songs can be found wherever you get great music. Please pick up these important and fantastic tracks.